Everyone, the world is a better place because you are here to join us. My name is Matt Brown, and I am the host of the Productive Conversations podcast. So today we have two for one. We're going to break down the Sweet 16. March Madness, the first weekend is behind us. There was a lack of upsets, but we seem to have the best teams available, which is a great thing. So we'll talk about the Sweet 16 weekend up ahead, and then the Elite Eight, or what we presume will be the Elite Eight, and we'll see where we go from there. And then we are going to preview baseball. Baseball begins this Thursday, opening day. We've been waiting a long time for this. And even in a time where baseball is having a PR crisis, we're very happy to see baseball is back. Talk Mets, Yankees, Shohei Ohtani and his gambling scandal, and a lot more. So action-packed show today featuring the great Russ Miller. What's up, Russ?
How you doing today, Matt? I'm doing great. How are you?
Great to see you again. We had a successful show last week, and I am sure we are going to continue it. So let us hop into it right now. So, Russ, before we break down what's left of each region, what did you think of the weekend? How did you feel? Like I said, it seems there was a lack of upsets. If you betted mostly favorites, you would have had a great payday. But that's not necessarily a bad thing either, because it seems we have the best teams remaining for the most part, the exception of like an NC State, for instance, who are still in there. But what did you think of the first two rounds of March Madness?
Well, I think clearly the big takeaway, the ACC has got four teams in the Sweet 16 out of five, right? Virginia was the first one out. They got knocked out. They scored 50 points and they're not a playing game. And then you have the Big East, which has three teams left. They're 6-0. Five of which were dominant performances, five of the six games. Marquette snuck by one game, Creighton snuck by in the other in double overtime. But the Big East, which got slighted by the committee, leaving Seton Hall out, who's still alive in the NIT, they're 6-0, and UConn looks to be that dominant force still in the Eastern region as they play a rematch on Thursday at 7:45 against San Diego State, which be an interesting game. They're 11-point favorites in that one. It should be very interesting. They have the longest NCAA streak going right now with eight games. They've won in a row now with 13 or more points. So clearly a dominant performance by the Huskies, and I look for them to continue that up in Boston as the fans are going to have a whiteout up there on Thursday and hopefully on Saturday as well for the region final against what looks to be an Iowa State team that is tremendous defensively, and they'll have to get by Iowa State and their streaky team. Hopefully, maybe Illinois will do them a favor and beat them. But, you know, a lot of firsts for UConn, first team after winning a championship to first UConn team anyway, to then get to the Sweet 16 in the history of their team. They've won it five times. They never had a champion go to the Sweet 16 or greater, so they're looking to do that. They're also looking to make their first ever consecutive Final Four appearance. So there's a lot on the line. There's a lot of pressure, but clearly they've handled it well. They've stayed injury free, thank God. And they seem primed for a trip to Arizona. So let's keep our fingers crossed. Let's pray that they get through the next two games. They're Connecticut's team, and let's hope they can achieve the two in a row.
Definitely. So as I mentioned, and I will stand corrected here, a lot of my bracket was based on assuming upsets, but there wasn't any really. And though there were some interesting games and some made a little bit of a push, it's like I said, it was mostly favorites, but that's just the beauty of this tournament is the unpredictability. We had Houston had a sweat a little bit. We see Kentucky did get knocked out, which is interesting there. James Madison made a little bit of a push, but then had reality set when they played against Duke. But no McNeese State, people thought they would make a run and stuff like that. There was,
as you said, it's been a very, Oakland, very chalky tournament. And, you know, not too many teams in the top four seeds are out. Kentucky, the three seed, is out in the South region. You have NC State, who's making a run in the South right now, is the lowest seed there. You have in the Midwest. Gonzaga's a five. They're still alive. They're going to play Purdue. I think that's a very tough matchup for Purdue. Creighton is still kicking and chiseling against Tennessee in the Midwest. And then in the Western region, you know, Clemson beat Baylor. So Baylor was a three seed. They got knocked out. The ACC, like I said, has done very well. Alabama won their game. They're the only SEC team, I believe. Well, them and Tennessee are still alive.
Yeah.
The SEC has really shit the bed. Iowa State out of the Big 12 is going to be tough to beat against Illinois. So that's a really good game, that second game in the Eastern region on Thursday night. Iowa State, Illinois, that's going to be a very, very tough game. Very good game, I think. Very competitive game to watch.
Yeah, why don't we hit that really quick in the East region with Iowa State and UConn versus San Diego State, as you mentioned. We had the rematch there. Ultimately, where do you see this going between those two? And make if you can make your money line picks on that.
I think UConn's going to survive San Diego State. I think they'll pull away late. And then in the other game, I think I'm going to pick an upset. I'm not even sure who's favored, but I'm going to pick Iowa State to beat Illinois.
I can confirm that right now. Let us look at that line really quick.
Iowa State's the two seed. They're playing Illinois, the three seed. So I assume Iowa State's favored a little bit.
Opening at -1.5 for Iowa State.
There you go. So Iowa State will get through, I think. And then Iowa State, UConn, it's going to be a very, very tough game. I think UConn gets through that one. So UConn coming out of the East still. I know you had Auburn. I won't rub it in on that.
No, I had Illinois, actually.
Oh, you had Illinois. Okay,
yeah, so who's staying alive?
You're still alive then, man. You're still
yes.
alive.
Yes. So okay. I did
so
my
let's
bracket.
Let's hope it's Illinois UConn then. One of us will be right, right?
Absolutely, and that's one I'll take. You know, obviously, selfishly, that is the one big upset I still have left is Illinois taking down UConn in the Elite Eight matchup if they were to get there. But, I did go with a lot of upsets, but it didn't matter. But ultimately, my Final Four, the one I finally did, I picked at the end, like where I wound up going, are still alive. Purdue and Houston, and then I have here my Final Four in UConn and North Carolina still alive. So I'm still excited there. Hopefully, I could pull off an upset in my pool. But it would have to hopefully last that long, but we will have to see what happens there. But either way, I'm not going to be, you know, heartbroken, of course, if obviously my home state wins. But I was just basing it off of, again, just seeing where the upsets were. And maybe it'll happen in it would be the early next week if that is it. Or sorry, it would be this weekend if that's the case.
All right, so we're going out west now because west is Thursday, also Thursday and Saturday.
That's right. North Carolina's taking on Alabama, and Arizona's taking on Clemson. Talk about these matchups with me, Russ.
I think Carolina beats Bama. I think Carolina's playing very well right now, very dangerous team. And I think they'll play Arizona. The NCAA did what they wanted, a Carolina-Arizona matchup in the Elite Eight. And I think I actually think Arizona is going to win that game. So very close game, but I think Arizona gets through and beats Carolina. And then UConn will play Arizona out in Phoenix, which will be very tough. It'll be a road game for UConn. Hopefully they'll survive. Yeah. Listen, Arizona, Iowa State, two teams right there that if they put their A game together and UConn doesn't bring their A game, they bring their B-minus game or C game, it could be close. It could be interesting. But I do think Arizona beats Carolina. As you know, UConn did beat North Carolina earlier in the year at Madison Square Garden. So I think in a lot of ways, I think UConn's better off playing Arizona, even though it's in Arizona, than playing North Carolina. I think Carolina is a very dangerous team, but I definitely think Carolina wins and Arizona win on Thursday night. And then, of course, advancing, I have Arizona.
You know, you mentioned about the hot streak UConn's on with Dan Hurley. And they really haven't sweat whatsoever, no close games, but you feel that these two matchups could give them a run for your money.
Well, I think, yeah, in the Elite Eight and then at the Final Four, I think they're going to have three tough games, tougher than last year when they beat the team they beat last year, win it. So I knew this going in. I thought this going in, and it's coming out the way I thought. Now, I'm not saying they're going to lose by any stretch, but again, they're a dominant team right now. They're playing great basketball. Donovan Clingan has been a force in the middle. He's been, I mean, he had numbers that only David Robinson put up going back 36 years. And in the Big East tournament, he had numbers that only Patrick Ewing put up. So he's being compared to Patrick Ewing, not statistically, and David Robinson. So right now, if they win the tournament, the NBA lottery is calling him, in my opinion. If he continues to play the way he's playing the next four games.
I was going to ask, do you think he can make a push to for an NBA, for a draft lottery? And you said it right there.
Absolutely. Especially, if they win the next four, and if he continues to play in the dominant fashion, he's been playing it. So,
you know, especially in the NBA game right now, where obviously in a regular season, no one seems to care about. But especially in a game, it all comes down to the postseason. And it seems for a league that has stepped away from the big man, but it seems the ones that do have them, you know, Bucks with Giannis, when healthy, Embiid with Philly. It seems like this guy could be a great addition for some lottery team there.
Donovan's taken 3 3-pointers this year. He's made 2 out of 3. He's not a 3-point shooter with the Huskies this year. He's supposed to be inside a force. And so dunking, and then they bring Samson Johnson off the bench. They bring DR off the bench, and they bring Jalen Stewart off the bench. So they have depth again this year. They have the top 8 players, I think, of any team when you look at the top 8 of all the teams, and they're favored and they have experience. So they should, you know, they should be cutting down the nets that Monday, April 8th in Phoenix, Arizona. But again, what they should do, what they will do, you know, this is a tournament. Anything could happen in a single game. So they've taken one at a time. They got San Diego State and probably Iowa State or Illinois. And we'll see if they get through the weekend. So, you know, then they have they get a prize. They have Arizona waiting for them next Saturday, a week from Saturday in Phoenix. So that's not an easy way. It's definitely, they're going to earn this, every bit of this championship. If they get it, they're going to earn it. So let's go to the South and Midwest.
Exactly. Yes, with the South region, where we have Houston taking on Duke and Marquette taking on NC State. As I mentioned, Houston was sweating during their second round game. We also see Duke playing dominant once again as a 4 seed. Then we had Marquette also almost blew a lead in their second game. And then NC State making the lowest rated seed right now, making a little bit of a run. What intrigues you about these two matchups?
Oh, I think NC State Marquette is great. A great game. That's going to be a fascinating game to watch. Tyler Kolek's playing great for Marquette. They're kind of on a little bit of a roll here. They you know, and NC State's on even a bigger roll. I mean, they did beat Texas Tech in Oakland, so they beat, you know, they beat lower teams than them. I think this is a step up in class for them, and I think they go home on Friday night. I think Marquette wins. Mm. I think in the other game, I'm going to stick with my pick of Houston, but I could see Duke winning that game. I think Duke's playing great right now. I got to see them live on Sunday before the UConn game in Brooklyn, and they're clicking. They've got that kid McCain is hitting shots. They've got a few NBA players on their team. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if that's a great game too. So you got two great games in the South region, and those are in the Sweet 16. So you definitely, with all the chalk and all the higher seeds winning, you're definitely having a much better round of 16 to watch as a fan. If you love basketball, you can't get two better days than Thursday night and Friday night in the Sweet 16. And then your regional finals are going to be tremendous. But I think Marquette gets through, and I'm going to stay with Houston. And then, of course, I have Marquette beating Houston in a close game too. So it's I think that region, though, it's either going to be Houston, Duke, or Marquette. I think Marquette is going to get through that one. But I could absolutely – see Duke making the Final Four right now. I hate to say it. It's going to be between these Big East teams and the ACC teams, so to speak. I do think Arizona gets by Carolina, but again, not surprised if Carolina wins that game. But again, my picks are Marquette in that region. I'll stay with my pick pre-flop, if you will, pre-tournament. What do you think, Matt?
I respect it. You know, I do think Duke can beat this Houston team. Houston team in the past couple months have struggled. You know, didn't even win their conference championship despite being a number one seed. And that Duke team seems to be real team ball. And we've seen them great on the perimeter and have lethal shooters of the three. I think it'll be good, and this Houston team could be vulnerable. And let me just say, with Marquette and NC State, NC State's a scrappy team. It's not like they have major NIL team players in there, but they have played well all year long. And again, with Marquette struggling against Colorado last week, blew the cover, and I think that is something to note with the NC State team, who's really hot right now with their big men. So I'm going to go with the NC State upset and a Duke upset. So I'm going to go with the lower seeds in each matchup and take it over and make it a little more interesting.
Sounds good to me. So who's your pick, NC State or Duke?
Out of those two, I'm going to go with the Blue Devils in the post-Coach K era. Forgive me, I can't think of the new coach, Duke's coach name right at this moment.
John Shire,
but what he's produced, as long as he doesn't have players who are trying to, trip other players, I think this team is really interesting to watch, and they've been under the radar all season long, and, Duke is a powerhouse in March Madness for a reason, and I even think with Coach Shire that they might even make a push, and wouldn't be surprised to see him in the Final Four next week.
You know, don't forget, Houston's playing in Texas, in Dallas. They earn that right to do that.
Definitely.
So I think that's going to be a little bit of an advantage there in that game. The spread is certainly telling you it's like a pick'em game, right? You got Houston's, a couple points ahead of Duke. That's it, right?
Yes, yeah, so I can confirm
just be careful, because Duke beat Vermont and James Madison to get to the Sweet 16. So Houston had to beat a very tough A&M team. I think Houston's winning that game. But, we'll see what happens. I'm rooting for Houston only because UConn guy, I don't really care for Duke. As well. Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't shock me. But Kelvin Sampson needs to get over the hump this year, though. Hopefully he will. They showed a listing of all the coaches in the Sweet 16 and national championships. You wouldn't believe who leads the pack of the teams that are left.
And who's that?
Dan Hurley with one. Everybody else has goose eggs.
Well, that's at least it shows a new generation, and
that's an interest. That's unbelievable. He could pull two ahead of the rest of these guys, and there's some really good coaches in there. McDermott, Shaka Smart, Shire's going to be good. Kelvin Sampson's been around forever. Rick Barnes in Tennessee, Mark Few at Gonzaga, Matt Painter at Purdue, Hubert Davis, Carolina,
and also some coaches you mentioned there. You know, especially like a Mark Few, for instance, who are due for a championship, if you will, very long established careers, made Final Four appearances, but haven't won the big one yet. And we'll see if they have that chance to.
Moving over to the Midwest, you got Gonzaga playing Purdue. I think that's a toss-up game. I think you could flip a coin. I think Purdue's going to be a little bit tight in that game. I really do. Now, they're playing in Detroit, which is definitely closer to Purdue than Gonzaga, than Washington, the state of Washington. So I think Purdue is going to have a little bit of an advantage there, just like UConn in the East up in Boston, which is only a 90-minute ride from campus. They're going to be all in white. Whiteout's going to happen for UConn. Then you have Creighton playing in Detroit against Tennessee. So Creighton is in Nebraska, which is probably closer – Omaha is probably closer to Detroit than Tennessee is Knoxville. Crowd might be a Purdue-Creighton type of crowd. I think that's what's going to happen. You're going to have Purdue play Creighton, and I think Creighton's going to knock off Zach Edey, because Creighton is used to playing against the big guy, and they beat UConn once this year. They're going to find a way to beat Purdue, and I think Creighton is going to get to Arizona, and it's going to be called the Big East Invitational with Creighton, Marquette, UConn, and Arizona. I'll stand by that. We'll see how
that would be very exciting. And it's funny, these Gonzaga and Purdue, we talked about Purdue actually getting to this point is a big accomplishment right now after so many heartbreaking upsets lately. And that Gonzaga too, They've made very deep runs, but they're out here. But I'm actually going to go with Purdue, who I ultimately say will win it, similarly to like Virginia, how they lost to a one seed last year. I still see a similar route to hopefully get their first championship in school history. And my reasoning is I think Zach Edey will be someone who steps up. Now, I know he's gotten criticized before in these big moment games, but he did play well in the first two games. I do expect him and what they have going there to rock and give a run for their money for Gonzaga. But I think that Purdue will sneak in there with a win. And Purdue Gonzaga, is opening at a Gonzaga, -5.5.
Purdue beat them by 10 earlier in the year, as you know. It's a rematch.
Right.
Beat them by 10. I don't see Purdue losing that game. I think, you know, I've seen Gonzaga play with this group of players last year in the regional in Vegas. They played against UConn. I wasn't impressed. They had Timmy on their team. You know, they're good. Mark Few's good, but I think his run ends. I think Purdue wins that game by double digits. I know the spread's only 5 points. It's disrespectful to Purdue, who's been number one for a period of time this year, just like Houston. I think you're going to, you know, I think Creighton and Marquette are going to have their hands full with Houston and Purdue. I think it's going to be an outstanding weekend. The next four, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, these are the best. This might be the best Sweet 16 and forward that we've seen in a long time as a college basketball guy. It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
How can you not like that? Something very exciting to look forward to. I think we are going to get a good weekend of basketball as well. So this is the time. And, you know, again, if you're a true college basketball fan, as you mentioned, this is exactly what you want. You're having Absolutely. The best teams going at
you
each other.
You hope a referee doesn't blow a call. You hope a kid doesn't get injured. You hope they don't throw too many technicals. You hope they don't put guys in foul trouble. You hope the guys can play. And if everything goes true to form, I think you're going to see a wonderful Final Four and a great couple, you know, Thursday, Friday, you're going to have a great you have 4, 8, 10, 12 games. The next 12 games of this tournament, the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight games are going to be phenomenal. And then you'll have some good basketball at the Final Four in Arizona. So,
oh man, I can't wait to break that down.
I don't know what else people can root for. If you're a college hoop fan, this is probably, like I said, it's a good time of the year because you got some great basketball Thursday, Friday.
There'll be plenty to celebrate there, and we'll react to it all next week. And it'll be very good. Got our picks out there. Now let us see how this all unfolds for Sweet 16 weekend with games on Thursday and Friday. Now let's transition to the second half of this podcast and let us preview the 2024 MLB baseball season. Okay, first things first. Before we actually break down any teams and over-unders, let us talk about the biggest story in baseball right now, and that is Shohei Ohtani's alleged gambling scandal. Now, I mentioned it last week on the show for the tweet cap. Now, let's break it down here, the great Russ Miller. As we know, Shohei Ohtani, it was reported that allegedly he had $4.5 million stolen from him from translator E.P. Mazuara, who was Shohei Ohtani's personal translator.
And good job with the name.
I kept practicing all. I botched it last week, and I'm not getting it wrong now.
Had a good job there.
Thank you. So that was the story told to us last week. But about Feth, even though a previous story came out that from ESPN, from Ipe himself, confirming that Ohtani was being a great friend, and he paid his gambling debts for him. So as I mentioned, we had Ipe said that Ohtani knew about this and he paid it off. Then Ohtani went and had a press conference in Los Angeles on Monday. And this is what exactly went down in a 12-minute. And I have a report here from Yahoo Sports, quote, in a roughly 12-minute statement, Ohtani denied having ever bet on sports and said repeatedly that Mazuara lied to him throughout the process. And Ohtani said, quote, I am very saddened and shocked someone I trusted has done this, Ohtani said through an interpreter at the beginning of his statement. He then denied being involved in sports gambling in all forms. He also continued by saying, quote, I never bet on baseball or any other sports or never have asked somebody to do it on my behalf, he said, and quote, and I have never been through a bookmaker to bet on sports. And he continues the quote by saying, until a couple of days ago, I did not know that this was happening. In conclusion, Ippy has been stealing money from my account and has told lies. Ohtani denied any knowledge of paying off any alleged gambling debts. Yet, it seems that a lot of people are not buying this story due to the conflicting reports, due to him not actually answering any questions from the media after the press conference. And as baseball begins their season on Thursday, this will be a dark cloud over it, especially Ohtani and the Dodgers. So first things first, breaking it down, Russ, what do you think? Do you think after this press conference, did Ohtani clear his name? Do you think he's involved with gambling? Do we think Ippy may be the fall guy for Ohtani? Lots to break down. Nothing's adding up. Tell us your thoughts on the Ohtani gambling scandal, Russ.
Did he clear his name? I'll answer it one at a time. Did he clear his name? No. I think we got to wait to see what the baseball investigation goes and the federal investigation goes. What I find to be most interesting here is there's a denial, right? There's a denial, and a denial from Ohtani. That alone to me is a red flag. Why is it a red flag? Because this guy is intimate with this guy. He's in his interpreter. He goes everywhere where he goes. He even goes to the games, right? He goes to the games.
Yes. One of the things to note here in that game in Korea, you saw them literally talking and hanging out, and it seemed pretty friendly conversation. And a couple hours later, then
They're very cozy. So here's the bottom line. Here's the least thing. The least thing is he's telling the truth. And he knew nothing about it. And he's cleared. And everybody's happy. Right? That's like the best result for baseball. The best result for Ohtani. And it's forgotten. That's probably what MLB wants. Obviously, that's what Ohtani wants. That's scenario one. How true will scenario one wind up being? It's a great mystery. We won't know that for a few weeks. That's scenario one. But for now, we're going to deny everything, start the season, and let's see what happens with these investigations. Obviously, they're not going to come out and say, we knew, boom, 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 I'm a gambler, boom, 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 because that's the end of it, right? Now he's suspended. It throws off the start of the season. So you knew if you had to pick which one he was going to come out and do a statement yesterday, he's going to come out with the denial. So now you have scenario one. Okay. Scenario one's playing out right now. Until the federal investigation comes back in regards to $4.5 million, which, by the way, you can't send a wire in the United States in a bank or any bank without evidence of ID, your picture ID, all that stuff. Right. So the banks. So already there's a red flag there in that story that he didn't know anything. So to me, there's a degree of lying right off the bat there. The second part of the lie, or what second part of what doesn't add up, is why the interpreter said what he said the first night and changed their story the next day after talking to who? Attorneys. Okay, so now the attorneys are involved. You made a point before. You said he didn't take questions after his statement by the media. Why? Because he doesn't want to talk. So to the media, he doesn't want to ask tough questions. He's hiding behind his language barrier. It's a lot of things. But at the end of the day, let's know one thing. There's certain people that like to gamble. They're competitive people. He's a competitive person. I think if you poll 10 people, they probably 8 of them think that he was involved in some way, shape, or form. Even if it was just covering. If he had come out and said, yeah, I covered for him, what he said was true, and I covered the bets for him, that would have made more sense than him just totally denying everything. Now there's a bigger cloud over over this whole thing, in my opinion. There's a bigger cloud over it to start the year. So the worst case, let's go all the way to the other side now, right? Because that's the free side, right? That's the side that gets everybody, Major League Baseball, right? Los Angeles Dodgers, Ohtani, the Anaheim Angels. Let's keep in mind, he played for Anaheim. We're going to go back and look at every game he pitched, every game he hit, every game. You know, they're going to look for line. You know, they're going to investigate this like they did with that rogue referee from the NBA several years ago.
Yeah, Donaghy.
Yeah. So, you know, Pete Rose never was accused of doing what this guy possibly could have done, by the way. Just to be fair to Pete Rose now. But when Pete Rose comes out and says, if I had interpreted it, I'd be in the Hall of Fame, while he's joking around kind of, he's really not. I mean, at the end of the day, this, if anything, if this guy gets away with this, then he should go in the Hall of Fame. Like, he can't have it both ways. You can't nail Pete Rose for that. 4,000-something hits, and then you're gonna let this guy get off scot free. Back to the worst case now. The worst case is he was the one gambling, and this guy took the fall for him. Okay, how could that be proven? I don't know. We'll never know. Maybe we'll never know. But that's the worst case. At which point, any bet on baseball, any bet against himself, or he bet with himself, whatever. That would be the worst case. He's banned for life for baseball. So to me, the truth probably lies somewhere between A and B. And at the end of the day, it should lie between A and B. If it only stays out here where everybody's clear and this is a bad story and the media doesn't know this, or, you know, it's thrown away. It's, you know what I'm trying to say. It's what's the word? It's covered up for, it's forgotten.
Yeah,
it's
swept under the rug.
Under the rug, or there's no real investigation from MLB and from the feds, which I think the federal government wants to do. You know, first of all, they're going after the guy running the operation, but they might go lenient on him if he comes clean about the kid, about the player.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things
I'm not saying that Ohtani. Here's what I don't understand. Okay, if this guy's doing his interpretation for him, if this guy's with him a lot, right? 100, they play 162 games. So he's with him for half the year at least. He doesn't know what he's doing with his time on the phone. I mean, I find it very hard to believe that, Matt.
Yeah.
He's not looking at a scoreboard when he's out, when he's at a game, or he's not looking, oh, look, the Giants are winning today, or look.
Yeah, why would he not be betting the sport he knows the best? And as a natural competitive gambler, usually would do that.
But my point is this is not going to die so quickly, because ESPN looks like they reported a certain thing the first night and it got changed by them. And that's going to come out. And, you know, and then he didn't take questions. So there's definitely I don't think that Ohtani, though, if I had a prediction, I'm going to say he's going to get half the season. He's going to admit that he covered for him. Because even if he covers for him, he's guilty of that Rule 24D or whatever it is. He has to be. I mean, you can't wire $4.5 million to an illegal bookmaking operation and not know what you're doing. And, you know, I don't care how much language barrier you have, you know what you're doing. So again, my opinion is that he'll get something. It probably won't be enough for the Pete Rose people, because at the end of the day, this clearly, I mean, this is beyond it. To me, it should be the story didn't even get enough wheels, in my opinion. I don't know why. Are people afraid Major League Baseball is going to tune out that media outlet? Like they don't want it to happen. To me, it is what it is. It's kind of sad, because, you know, every other commercial is about FanDuel and DraftKings. They have DraftKings all around the stadiums now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to answer to the Ohtani camp, and the translator is going to have to come clean, because, you know, and I know that, for the integrity of baseball, you got to get the answer. You got to figure out exactly what happened and why the story changed. And there's going to be questions that won't be necessarily even asked in a court of law, but, you know, it's going to be not good. And I don't know if it's going to have wheels, if it's going to be solved quickly. It might take months to figure it out. You know, it might take till July or August, let's just say, or May or June, whatever. It's going to take time. And, you know, once the investigation comes back, we'll see what happens. But it could be a situation where right now he's playing like, you'll know if he's distracted or not. I mean, you know, this is a big, big item that I'm not so sure it's going away as quickly as others think it's going to go away. There's people out in, you know, in social media saying, yeah, baseball's just going to let it go, sweep it under the rug and move on. But I'm not sure that that's going to work here with the outrage that you've seen and some of the comments out there from media members, from other teams, from players.
So. Yeah, I'm glad there's a federal investigation with the MLB investigation. And I'd said before, MLB has messed up so bad with their sport on a PR sense, and especially with previous scandals, the steroid scandal, which they botched and messed up. And I still think baseball has never been as popular as it ever was since that steroid scandal, getting embarrassed by Congress and being proven as hypocrites there, turning their back to players who, you know, made their sport popular again. And, you know, you want to break down PEDs, you go all day with that. But regardless, they messed up the PED scandal. They messed up the cheating scandal with the Astros, did not held them accountable at all after literally cheating and arguably stole a World Series. So how could you trust that they would handle this right as well? So having at least a federal litigation on top of that can hold at least MLB accountable. And yeah, you know, you have a better chance of finding out the truth.
I don't think they're going to be able to do what they did with the Astros thing. You know, you can't, you know, you didn't take away the Patriots Super Bowl when they beat the Rams that year that Belichick knowingly videotaped stuff.
Yeah.
And the bald gate and all that stuff. So you're not going to take away the Astros championship. You could put an asterisk though, but as far, and it's same thing with the steroid era. But this one I think is about making sure that everything's legit in your game. It's the integrity of baseball. It's in everyone's locker room. I think they're not going to be able to not. Now, like I said to someone else, it's not about being able to prove that he's guilty. It's being able to show that he's not guilty in this case.
Yeah,
In the court of public opinion, most people assume that there's some sort of guilt there. So in a sense, if you're going to, you need to come clean with the story though. You can't say you knew nothing about it. That's just, that to me is, again, how does someone lose that much over that period of time, send 9 wires for $500,000 and this guy not know that he's, I mean, what do you think, people are stupid? So that's what I'm trying to get at. In other words, they came out with that right off the bat. They came out with the first night was to cover his gambling. The second time is, this guy stole his money. Shohei wasn't aware of it. Again, you can't wire money without there being a telephone wire with the person on the phone, that person, Shohei Ohtani, on the phone. You can't steal money wiring money that way. It's virtually impossible to do.
Exactly. And you mentioned there's crimes involved here. There's a lot of people, if this were the case, the people will face serious jail time.
I don't agree with the people that think baseball is going to sweep it under. If I think anything, they're going to show that they have integrity and they're going to do the right thing, investigate it. And when the investigation comes back that indeed he was betting, whether it's not on baseball or not, I want to be clear, he might not have bet on baseball, but then show that he didn't bet on baseball. But if they show that he had any action on baseball games, he's out the door. Now, here's my point. Let's assume it was only the interpreter betting. It really was only the interpreter. Guess what? Mm-hmm. That's part of you. That guy goes with you everywhere. He's allowed on the field. That's like as if you violated the rules. Your interpreter is part of you. In my opinion, in any common sense, the guy's with you at all times, basically. From the time you're at the field to the time you go home, whatever. He's with you. So to me, by association, he's guilty. So that's my opinion. Again, my opinion. If the allegations are true, then he should be banned for life. And that's it. That's it. That's all I could say. I mean, it's common sense, right?
You know, the one thing we agree that it seems that this story of theft is bogus, especially from, you know, the common sense. How could you not know? And I understand some people argue, well, you know, this kind of happens a lot. We've seen celebrities have it. Didn't Billy Joel have his accountant steal from him and he didn't know, allegedly? Just giving examples of that, whether it's true or not. Some people are trying to make that argument. But regardless, as you said, the biggest thing is that they have to make sure that there is no bets on baseball specifically for the integrity. And even if I feel that baseball's had not had a good track record of keeping themselves, their league accountable, I do think you make a great point that they have to, because the integrity of your sport is on the line right now.
I think if the late, great Bart Giamatti, okay, and I don't care what anybody says, he had ultimate integrity, Bart Giamatti. I mean, he threw Pete Rose out. But Bart Giamatti, if he were alive today, in my opinion, he would have instantly suspended Ohtani until he's clear.
Yeah.
That's what they should do, but they won't because they're protecting this guy. That's what they should do. In other words, you're suspended. I mean, you wired money to an illegal bookmaker under your name. You're suspended now. You
want to fight that?
You want to fight that? Then let's go. You want to fight that? Let's go. Now we have to. Now he has to talk. So that's what I would do. And the Dodgers are going to protect it too because they just spent a lot of money on it. But at the end of the day, if he's thrown out of baseball, they don't have to pay that. That contract's null and void. You know that. If, in other words, if baseball says you can't play anymore, that contract's null and void. And he loses all that money. So the bottom line is, what's going to happen here? It's anybody's guess. But again, I think if Bart Giamatti were around, there'd be the media would ask him, hey, you threw Pete Rose out. To me, this is even worse. I mean, you got $4.5 million. Pete Rose at most, I think, was a couple hundred thousand. I mean, this is some serious. If Ohtani's got a gambling problem, just say he's got a gambling problem. He bets on other sports. He doesn't bet on baseball. We made a mistake. Suspend me 90 half the season or for a full year, and I'll come back. You know, that's it. Or if the interpreter, again, to me, the interpreter is just almost as bad as Ohtani because the interpreter is with Ohtani all the time. And again, it's very hard to believe. Like, people knew Pete Rose was betting on other games because he used to ask them what the scores are. You're going to tell me that nobody knew that this guy in the Angels organization, because that's where he came from, not fair to blame the Dodgers, the Angels organization, they knew. They had to have known something too. So I've talking to some people that have connections with baseball, they all think that he's guilty of something. So, I mean, if they're going to hide this, it's going to be a black eye, black mark, and it's going to be very, very tainted. As it is, I have a problem watching the Mets right now with what they're doing. But,
You know, Russ, I'm going off a headline. I haven't actually read the article about how ESPN may be dropping their baseball coverage. I haven't read the article yet.
Why are they dropping their coverage?
Maybe if I could quickly skim through this. But the I would assume, you know, again, baseball's had a hard time marketing. When they are a top story, it's probably because of some controversy. Maybe they're not getting the views. It is clear it is very much a regional sport. It's an awful announcing story, so I'd have to quickly jot that down as we're also trying to get to, through some other things. But I think that's, you know, just a sign as we're about to, you know, break this down, because at the end of the day, I still think baseball, I love baseball. It's my first love, like a lot of people. And I mean, you're a Met fan, I'm a Yankee fan. I'm very much excited for it. And I think there is still a place for it in the American culture. But
Ohtani says he never wired the money, that he stole his identity and wired the money. Now, if that's the case, let's go to the bank records and let's see. If it's a telephone transfer, let's go to the audio tape. If it's an in-person thing, let's go to the actual – let's talk to the bank that did the wire. You know, there's ways to find out who actually did the wire. And if it really was the interpreter that did the wires, then that should come out by the bank. The bank should issue statements, hey, he did not, 9 wires were done by this interpreter, not by Ohtani, who mistakenly accepted the wires, even though Ohtani – you know, then it would have to be sent back to Ohtani. But if the bank says no, Ohtani sent them and we have his proof that he did it, then the guy's lying right there because he says he didn't wire the money. So once you lie once, that's it, right?
Yeah, that is it. But, you know, again, hopefully it just doesn't result that the other day, we don't want to see it corrupt. We don't want baseball to look even more bad. And again, back to the, you know, quickly skimming through this awful announcing article on how MLB may be able to opt out of their deal with ESPN in 2025. It seems just as a result of just, you know, local rights to several teams have been raised. You know, trying to maybe a deal, trying to get a equity in it might not come through to help, you know, their gambling stuff and stuff like that. And just the lack of popularity of the sports and the ratings aren't what they are hoping. You know, it could just be a result of that. Just there's not enough demand for baseball ultimately, which is sad. You're not surprised, but with a horrible marketing department, with lack of stars if you're not in a region, and even having a gambling aspect in the summer where baseball is your only sport, you know, to bet on, with the exception of golf, but that's every other weekend, and, you know, tennis, and then tennis tournaments, it's still not getting the long-term interest, which is just sad. And I still will break this down. There still will be a fan base regionally, but when you have, you know, your best star being, you know, ultimately, whether guilty or not guilty, right now, people think he's corrupt. It's just an example of how, you know, baseball has just died in popularity.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all I could say is that deal won't be decided anytime soon. They have until 2025 to decide. But until then, baseball needs a miracle. They need an extremely exciting World Series. You know, last year's World Series, I love baseball, and I wasn't really that interested in Rangers, Diamondbacks. So hopefully they could get two hot teams from major markets in there. And why don't we see where this can possibly go? And quickly, let's break down one of the teams in the New York Mets. You know, you mentioned how disappointed you are in them. You know, they have a new baseball president of baseball operations, David Stearns, in. It seems like their lineup is actually pretty intimidating. Alonso, Lindor, adding J.D. Martinez to the mix. And then you don't really have much of a pitching staff, though, to counteract that.
That's now the
over-under for the Mets is 81.5. Would you say that's over or under? And how would you go about their season coming into this?
I think one of the key players for the Mets, who had a bad season last year, or at least not as good a year as he had the year before, he seems to play well every other year, is Jeff McNeil. I mentioned his name first only because I know Alonso's going to put up his normal good numbers. I think Lindor is going to have a good year. Nimmo, and they have a decent everyday lineup. They really do. J.D. Martinez adds to it. J.D. Davis, I believe it is, or no? Who's the guy they got from the Giants last year? Towards the end of the year, left-handed power hitter was going to be the DH from the left side. The guy they got. The Mets.
The not Darren Ruff.
No, not Darren Ruff.
In who the Mets from the Giants? Forgive me.
Well, they picked up a guy. I don't know if it was from the Giants. It might have been the Orioles. I'll find his name while we're talking here. But I do think the Mets, the Mets have a lot of ability to put points, put numbers on the board, score a lot of runs this year, more so than last year. But the analytics will find a way to screw it up for them. If I had a gun to my head, I would say that we're looking at an under 81.5 for the Mets this year. I'm sure
really
people that like to fade me love that. But if you're a Mets fan, you'll love that. But I don't think they're going to win more than 80 games. I think they're going to be like they were last year. Key player, Starling Marte back. DJ Stewart is the guy I was thinking of. DJ Stewart. And, you know, and I think Alvarez playing a full year should be good at behind the dish. Francisco Alvarez. But their pitching is so weak. Their pitching is very, very weak.
Quintana is your ace, technically?
I don't see them winning more than half their games. So that's why I would say, Johnny, under for the Mets, 81.
So a lot of people have accused the Mets of punting this season due to lack of making moves in the offseason. Still not replacing Kodai after his injury, despite having some options still available. Do you think that's the case as a Met fan?
Of course. They punted last year on July 28th, and now they're punting this year. They're going to punt, punt, punt. You know, the
Must
guy.
be disappointing for somebody who was taken over by a big bad owner and promising a World Series in 5 years. I believe this is year four for him. And, well, reality sinks in. You can't throw money at a team to try to fix them. Look at Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, the Mets are going to be the MESS. The Mets are not. The Mets are a mess right now. So I would say under for the Mets. They don't have the starting pitching. The
rotation. Is there any hope at all you think that they can change? Unfortunately, their offense, you need pitching as much as you'd like to score runs. And I will say this lineup could definitely score runs, but if you can't pitch, you know, you'll lose games with like 10-9 and 5-7 and stuff like that.
The Mets aren't gonna. They're just not gonna do it.
And this new manager, you kind of forget Mets have a new manager. He's just.
Well, I think that's almost irrelevant based on the way they run their club through their analytics department. So, while I like to pick on Buck Showalter, it wasn't really all on him. But the hit batsman thing, if a guy gets hit this year, please charge them out once. Just have a fight once. Show some passion once.
Exactly. As I talk enough. About, you need stuff like that to help make the game interesting.
You need to build chemistry in the locker room. I think they had it last year. I think Alonso's a good leader. I think they didn't lock him up. I mean, right now they're on jeopardy of losing a lot of Mets fans if they don't sign Pete Alonso next year in the offseason. Yeah. A long-term deal and get him locked in. They're in jeopardy of really, you know, there's nothing to say. So the Mets, you want to talk Yankees? What's the Yankees over under?
For sure. But just to put a bow on the Mets, and I'm not a Met fan, but you have to re-sign a homegrown Met, and your franchise has seen faces of franchise leave for dumb deals. Seaver, Strawberry is an example, and you can't do this. And figuring out what you're trying to do on the long term, David Sturge, you know how to create enemies if you decide not to resign at the end of the year, or if you trade him in the deadline if you are having a bad season at that point. Can't do it. You have to do the right thing, and that's the thing where these fans sometimes feel ignored, or you know, you're just not trying to make the most of the business.
They're going to see a drop in attendance this year. I'll tell you that right now. You're going to see a big drop.
Okay, it is what it is.
And they'll realize maybe we should re-sign them and build this thing back up quickly. This, you know.
Protest. And yes, let's talk about the Yankees really quick. The New York Yankees over-under is 91.5. After they had a really disappointing season, after they didn't even make the playoffs last year, and after being accused of being cheap, after being accused of not trying anymore and only caring about the business and not about the team, Brian Cashman did make a huge trade in getting Juan Soto, which allows you to have a lineup which includes Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, and your up-and-coming star coming back from injury, and Domingo, and Jason Dominguez, and then we also have Giancarlo Stanton, who's had an amazing spring. If he can have a bounce back year, that only enhances this lineup even more. Having Soto and having a Yankee team that was very right-handed, you bring in, obviously, Soto. You bring in Alex Verdugo. You have Rizzo coming back. You actually have a lineup that is pretty even of lefties and righties. And even without Gerrit Cole to start the season off, you do have a pitching staff that does, as long as people stay healthy, as long as they don't go on social media rants like a Marcus Stroman, you could have a pitching staff that is comparable as well. And with a bullpen that was the only thing to look forward to with the Yankees last year, I think this team has a lot of promise. I would go and say over 91.5. And do well so you can want Juan Soto to stay. I know that it's going to be very difficult to have figuring out how you can pay Stanton, Soto, Judge, and Cole. But if there's a will, there's a way. Ohtani did show us this deferment money is an option. You just have to give a reason for Juan Soto to want to stay. So the big thing here about this Yankee season, not only getting back in the playoffs, maybe for once actually knocking out Houston, and, you know, making a run, even in a very tough division where you have a rising Baltimore Orioles team, a sneaky Blue Jays team, and, you know, that's pretty much it. And I'm not worried about the Red Sox. They're going to be terrible this year. But this team should make some strides this year. And, of course, you have Tampa as well, who's always sneaky. They somehow always, when somebody leaves, somebody else steps up. But I see this Yankee team winning the division and making a real push to try to win the AL. As long as they have the team to do it, now you actually have to do it.
I think you're right on with the over 91 wins. I think you're spot on with the analysis of the team. They're going to be much better than they were. And, you know, Brian Cashman, people fall in love with him again. I mean,
yes,
they're due to have a nice run this year in the postseason as well. So, barring any major injuries throughout the team or the flu bug, if you know what I mean, you know, injuries that spread, you know, a couple guys go down here, barring injury, obviously they have the talent to make it to October and make a run there too. So good luck to your Yankees, Matt. Good luck.
Please, because we are going to be upset if they do not do well. But they should have the tools to make a run. And just looking at some other over-unders that are interesting, where we have, as I talked about, the Baltimore Orioles, they have an over-under of 90.5 with all their young studs led by Hutchinson over there.
It's a balanced schedule again, right? So you're going to play a lot more teams, everybody, right? So
yeah.
That's why you're seeing 91.5, 90.5 in the same division. So it's very possible they both go. They have two good teams there. The AL East is phenomenal. At least it was last year. It was a good division. I think they could win over 92, the Orioles.
One thing I'm excited to see, the Red Sox at 77.5 take the under on there. Talk about a team that really was Rafael Devers. They bring in Giolito only to get hurt, lose him for the season. We love to see it. The Astros at 93.5, obviously still with that core going on. There's something to watch out for. Seattle makes some moves. Texas making a push at 88.5. Some good stuff there. And then some of the more.
What are the Braves in the National League? What are the Braves at?
I'll tell you just in 1 second. Let me just finish it off with the AL East, though. Just some other really bad teams. We have Oakland at 57.5 in there at the moment. Maybe it should be their last season in Oakland, even though I believe it's not till, is it 26 or 27 that they actually will go to Vegas?
They got them losing 105 games this year.
Yeah.
57.5 wins. Wow.
You have the Chicago White Sox at 61.5. Another embarrassing team. I mean, yeah. But then you have like the Angels with Trout left at 72.5, Kansas City at 74.5. These teams don't really seem to be that competitive. Again, another problem with baseball, but should be a mess. Should be a real mess. But now to the NL side of things. Your Atlanta Braves have an over-under of a 101.5. Talk to me about that. With it also includes in the NL East, the Phillies at 89.5. Watch out for that number. And then, as I mentioned, the Mets at 81.5. The Nationals at 65.5. And the Marlins at 78.5.
So, Matt, when we look at the NL East, we see Atlanta with 101.5 and the Mets 20 games worse at 81.5. And think about the expectations last year going into what the expectations are this year going in. The Mets are like Enron. They're a sinking ship. They're going down. They're like the Titanic as far as opinion goes on the team and the winning ability to win games. That's why they don't have no pitching at all. So back to the Braves. I think the Braves will hit that over 101.
You really think so, huh?
Oh, yeah. What are the Dodgers?
103.5.
I would take the under because I don't think Shohei's playing the whole year.
Yes, especially after that dark cloud.
I would definitely
take. And Yamamoto, one start, pounded by the Padres. Now, obviously, it's just one start, but it would have been more assuring if he pitched well.
telling you, Matt, I just have a feeling that guy's going to get that guy's in trouble. So we'll see.
We have also some other things. As I mentioned, 89.5 for the Phillies. We have 84.5 for the Cardinals, Giants at 83.5, Padres 83.5. Other teams in the same range, 84.5 for Chicago. Want to keep in Bellinger, also rebuilding. And your reigning NL champion, Arizona Diamondbacks, at just 83.5.
The reigning NL champs are two games more than the Mets. I that's hard to believe.
Again,
Mets are too high because people like betting New York, so they inflate that number. And the Arizona, nobody likes. So the Arizona's over and Mets are under. But you know, it is what it is. I mean, I you know, it's nothing for me as a Mets fan to look forward to. My downtime will be at hopefully after the Final Four, after the championship game, it'll be some downtime. I can't get locked into this team. I can't.
The Colorado Rockies are your lowest, by the way. It's 60.5. All I know is Chris Bryant, and that's it. Baseball. I wish, and I do, you know, obviously I always follow the locals, but it's just hard. This baseball is not marketing. I don't know. I can't name you every single star from these teams. It's on me as well, but it's almost like baseball only cares about the Dodgers, Mets, and Yankees. It's all they talk about. And,
yeah,
you know, just running this show and, you know, getting my sports knowledge, I could tell you anything about the Mets and Yankees, anything, break those teams down deeply. But for the rest of the league, it's a damn shame that I can't break this more down with them. But I plan on, you know, doing my due diligence as a host and get more into it and be aware of the sport and understand more why baseball has gotten to this point of just irrelevancy. But again, that's a story for another day. I am excited for baseball, though. It's still an amazing sport to watch, especially when it gets really dramatic. Just I hope after this cloud is wiped away from Ohtani, maybe we'll have some big stars we can focus on that are not in the big markets. And then maybe baseball can make a push again for some golden era that you don't need somebody to cheat to make it interesting. We'll see if that happens. I'm excited. And I know you are too, Russ. But I will see you next week to review the Final Four.
Beautiful.
And that. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
You
and
too, Matt.
Let's just see what happens at opening day, right?
Thanks. Yep. Let's see what happens. Thanks
right.
for having me on the show, Matt. Have a good one.
Pleasure as always, Russ. See you.
Be well. Yep. Bye-bye.